Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Moon, Moo, and You, the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck, and Joan Adams and I host this show. Our guest this evening is Len Lasko, author of Healing with Love. As some of you know, my husband Tom and I will be opening our home, barn, and grounds for a spiritual retreat, and this will open in August, and Leonard is coming to be with us on the 13th, 14th, and 15th of August. And the workshop is entitled Opening to the Oneness Through Love. We hope some of you will join us for this event, and I will put up a sign up in the chat room. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Joining me now is Joan Adams. Hi, Joan.
Hi, Kate, and good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you. And you?
Wonderful.
Good.
I am thinking that... Oh, never mind. Leonard is on the line, and let me just bring him on. Hello, Len.
Hello. It sounds like I'm joining some fun here.
Yes.
Always.
As always. How are you this evening?
Well, I have a little bit of a cold, so I may cough every now and then.
Well, you are free to do so.
Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Drink plenty of water. Drink
exactly.
Plenty of water.
Exactly.
I don't know if you got the introduction, but we were talking about how Tom and I, my husband Tom, are going to be opening our home for a spiritual retreat center, and the name of that is the Blue Heron Farm Spiritual Retreat Center. And we are so excited that you will be with us on the 13th, 14th, and 15th of August when we will be discussing, and, well, I shouldn't say discussing, hopefully we won't be talking too much, and we'll, you know, the opening to the oneness through love, which you are well-versed in at this point.
Sure, and it's really an honor to be part of the inauguration of this wonderful healing center.
Thank you. I'm very excited.
Well,
and
it's wonderful.
I was thinking about all the things that are so wonderful about this place. I always think about that, but one of the things you will appreciate, Len, is that there is the most amazing green here in Pennsylvania. And it is exemplified here where we live because it's very wild here, and we live on the Conestoga River, and the property line goes hits some woods for about a half a mile or even a mile, maybe a half a mile, before it hits a golf course, which is, has a lot of free land, and then some more woods, and then it hits 500 acres of a Lancaster County Park, which is very, very wild. So I would say that this is like we live in an unofficial wildlife refuge. It's not official, but it's unofficial.
Yeah.
And I think
wonderful.
There's no way in the world that the best way, I should say, in the world to really communicate with spirit is in nature.
Exactly. And you know what it reflects is wildness, and also, as you said, there's a half a mile of space you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a reminder. It's almost like, because space is really a portal to oneness for most of us. When we become aware of the space rather than the content that fills the space, we start to see a reflection of our own true nature in nature. And that's what's also very beautiful. And then we see the uniqueness in nature of every leaf and every tree and how different they are. And yet they're also part of the one, you know. We have ways of calling it one by just giving it the name nature. But really, it's a reflection of the one and the uniqueness within the unity. And that's what's also so beautiful. I think a lot of people confuse difference for separateness, and that's the problem. That's one of the huge problems that we face. It's a confusion. It's a mental confusion. Something that we've been taught and something that we've been, in a sense, suckered into because things appear separate when they're simply different. And we don't recognize that. And in my own experience over the years, that appearance, that illusion of separation has been a source of great suffering, distress, disharmony. Actually, many illnesses are traced back to the illusion of separation. That's what I found over the years anyway, you know.
No, that's true. When you do your holo-energetic work, there is that constant theme of the separation, causing great imbalance within the physical body, and, of course, in every other body, too.
Yeah, but separation not only from other people, but separation from nature in general.
From nature, from other people, and separation from one part of yourself from another that's too painful to hold in consciousness because you know, there was some initial, as part of growing up, as part of the human condition, there's always some wounding that takes place. You know, I mean, even being born out of the womb and coming into the world, being forced through this narrow channel, and then suddenly popping out into the world. I mean, that's a separation right there. The placenta is, you know, the cord is cut, and you're separated from your mother, from that warm, dark place. It's not always secure because there are times that we can get to that where you're actually feeling the insecurity of your mother and your father. But nevertheless,
sure.
There's separation on a physical level, and then something can happen emotionally, and you feel a sense of separation of one part of yourself from another. Sometimes it's interpreted as I'm not good enough or some feeling of that sort. And so that kind of separation from a part of yourself eventually can result in illness. At least that's been my experience throughout the years that I've been doing healing work and practicing medicine. And then, of course, the most important separation, the most critical separation, is the separation from our spiritual essence, from our nature, from source. And that's what the seminar that we're going to be doing in August is designed to dissolve that illusion of separation, those veils that hide us from our inner light.
Just a quick request, Len. Do you have a volume on your telephone that you can turn up?
Let me see. Volume. Let me see. Maybe I can move this closer, my microphone.
Well, that sounds better.
Okay.
Now I was having trouble hearing. Turned mine up.
That sounds better. Another cause for separation, and this is when we're talking about the workshop and the retreat, helping to dissolve separation. One of the great separators in what we've been exploring on the prayer blog is time, linear time. And in a retreat setting like that, and you do need a good 3 days, as we have discussed in the past. We don't want people to come for 1 day or 2 days. We want people to come for 3 days because the whole linear time concept, perception, experience will gradually dissolve over a period of time. It could actually happen quickly for some people, but for some people who are totally rooted in linear time, it may take a little longer, but I think that that feeling of space, that space that you were talking about earlier, the spaciousness, the timelessness, is what people need to experience. What do you think?
Well, yeah, that's where this total immersion is key. When I tune into time, there are different ways of describing it. It's a man-made, mind-made artifice. Time doesn't exist in nature, in a sense. I mean, we've taken what are the intervals between events, and then we've marked them off, and in different ways. But actually, that's all it is an interval between events. Now, thing is, if time is an interval between events, and if you dissolve the events, then what happens to time?
Right, because nature and the animals, especially when I hang out with my dog, he doesn't look at life like events. He is in a timeless space. Everything is totally at one. I think animals are especially the companion animals, because they are tamed, I think wild animals have a little bit more problematic things happening in their lives, but our companion animals are in sync with us, and they're here to teach us about timelessness.
That's right, and for us, when we enter into a place of stillness implies that there, at least for that interval, there are no events. When there are no events, it's timeless.
Yes. So that's a mindset to think of life as a series of events. That's a mindset.
Yeah, yeah. And what we do generally is we focus on the events because they represent what we call experiences. And so we identify with these experiences as if that's who we are, rather than the background, the content, the stillness itself, which is timeless, which is beyond time and also beyond space, because space is simply the measure of the distance between events. So time is the measure of the interval, and space the measure of the distance. But when there are no events, or interestingly enough, if we don't identify with events,
that's what I'm thinking. Yeah,
we are in a state of presence, which is
timeless, presence,
and which is timeless and spaceless, and it's what Eckhart Tolle talks about is the now. It's just whatever occurs in the now, and then time and space arise, and then they subside. But we're as human beings, we become victims of the creation of our own mind, this artifice of time, space, and we're run by it.
Right.
There are some practicalities. We have to have agreements, just like we have agreements about money. What is money when you look at it? Paper, plastic. I remember going to a store and giving a guy my credit card, and he looked at me very arrogantly and said, "We don't take plastic, you know." And so I took out, you know, paper money from my pocket, and I said, "Do you take paper?" You know, he looked at, you know, it's like you think that one is more real than the other. It's
yeah.
The agreement that society has that this has a this is a unit of value in exchange for energy or for something that has like value, you know. And the
yes.
same is true for time. There are agreements about this, but it doesn't really have any intrinsic value. It's just a series of agreements. But then we fall prey to this artificial creation, and suddenly it runs our lives, just like our thinking, the thoughts that we have run our lives, when in fact these thoughts, most of these thoughts are looped. They keep coming back again and again, and if you really start to explore the thoughts, they're not even our thoughts. A lot of these thoughts
right.
come from the collective, and they come from early childhood conditioning, misperceptions, commonly, or interpretations, or even experiences that we've had that we then convert into or crystallize into beliefs.
Beliefs, and then many, many false beliefs. Yeah, false. I wonder if there's any belief that isn't false.
Well,
like,
all beliefs are illusions. All beliefs
yeah.
are illusions. They're, you know, a belief is something that's about something. It's not it. It's you. You have, it's a sort of, it's removed from the situation, and it's an interpretation that's based on a situation. See, when you really know something, oh, is this the famous quote of Jung's when he was asked if he believed in God? And he said, "No, I don't believe in God. I know God." See, he had direct experience. It's like saying, do you believe in your thumb? Believe in my thumb. No, what are you talking about? You know, I have a thumb. Oh, I have a thumb. I mean, I don't believe in a thumb. But when you have to believe, do you believe in Santa Claus? Well, yeah, you know, it's a story. And do I believe the story or not? So these beliefs,
yeah.
So we're run by these beliefs and their expressions as thoughts. And then every thought has a feeling, and every belief is associated with a thought and a feeling. And these beliefs affect our perceptions. They color, they're like filtered glasses, and they color our perceptions. So we don't even see what's really there. We see who
well,
we are, but
don't
not
you think,
what's there.
I'm thinking that the beliefs feed into the separation, and I think that most, I can't think of anything to contradict this, but it just seems like these beliefs are nothing but judgments, judging. And as soon as you start to judge things, and you can see how people start becoming, they have their knee-jerk reactions about things, and they're not compassionate or loving.
Right. And, you know, this combination of beliefs and perceptions and interpretations and judgments, as you say, you know, there's a nice, neat little three-letter word called ego, which people use to describe it. It's not important, but it does create this sense of separation, and and the sense of separation then creates a sort of an underlying feeling of anxiety and fear, you know, and sometimes anger, and sometimes even for some people, depression. But all of this it could be put under the aegis of stress. It produces, the sense of separation creates a feeling of stress that each person expresses and experiences in different ways. And then this stress releases a series of hormones like cortisol and adrenaline. And they, in turn, and we know from the new science of epigenetics, they in turn signal the genes to turn some on and some off. And from these, we now know cancer, heart disease, hypertension, autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes, on and on, you know, can result from these beliefs, from these egoic identifications that we have, our self-judgments, and that sense of separation that we talked about before from ourselves, from others, from nature, from our environment, and from source. So, you know, there we have it. And it's a whole series, and it's all based on illusion. You know, it's all based on illusion. And one of the other things that I found out is that since we're all one, we're all whole in that sense. And physicists are of course, now trying to mathematically demonstrate that that's the truth. But it's becoming very obvious in at the very cutting edge of physics that everything is interconnected, that there's non-locality, it's called. Everything is interconnected and non-local. And so since there's this illusion of separation, it must take an enormous amount of energy to maintain this illusion of separation. And that's what causes illness, all this energy to maintain these belief systems, these misperceptions, these self-judgments. It requires an enormous amount of energy, and it blocks off energy in different areas of the body and the energy body. And disease then has an opportunity to find a home there. And sometimes it produces illness directly. Sometimes it creates vulnerabilities over here. And when we release the illusion of separation, all this energy that was tied up in maintaining it is released for our own healing. And that's why I call healing into wholeness through love the ultimate medicine. Because when you release that illusion of separation, you come home to your true nature, and all this energy now starts to flow through your body in the natural way, and as you use the word balance, bringing you back into balance, into harmony, and such.
Yes. Well, yeah, I think that people do become ill, and you know, the great yogis have gotten ill, and they die, and they're still, and they have that. They don't have any separation, but. Let's face it, everybody has to leave this plane of existence, so that's a given. And you can leave this plane of existence in a state of balance, and you can even get sick if you are an advanced yogi and still get sick and still pass on to the other dimensions. But I do believe we must... we have somebody in the chat room who has, I believe, a great... Her name is Mary Sunshine, and she has a tremendous amount of illness in her life, and she has pretty much keeps it under control. She's has polio as a child, and then got the post-polio syndrome as an adult. And she had been told by the doctors that she... I know she doesn't mind me telling you this... been told by the doctors that she would be living in a wheelchair for the rest of her life, and she just recently ran the Boston Marathon.
Isn't that magnificent?
Isn't that wonderful?
Yes. She's on the line. Let me bring her on.
Okay.
Hello, Mary Sunshine.
Hello. Hello, Moonvine. Hello, Moo. How
Hi,
are
Mary.
You? Hi, Lynn. It's great to
great.
Meet you.
Hi, Mary. That's so wonderful. What a model you are. Wow.
That's right.
Thank you. Well, it's been a lot of work, and it's a lot of work every day. And one of the things I'm so grateful for is Kate's Prayer Blog, which is part of my morning spiritual routine, and I get so excited every morning wondering what gift is awaiting, and it's become a part of my daily ritual. And I also discovered the gift of writing inspirational poetry. And through you were talking about Jung earlier, and you know, the unconscious predicts the future, and the first poem I wrote shortly after I was diagnosed with post polio was called Running the Race, and I was in a brace using a wheelchair at times for mobility, and I was just visualizing my body being free. And through all of my poetry, it speaks to that, and using a lot of visualization, meditation, seeing God as my electrician and my plumber who's been helping to rewire.
That's wonderful.
And I'm sorry, what?
I said that's wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so it's an amazing journey, and every day is a gift, and of course the practice of gratitude is just so incredibly important.
Well, I believe we can learn from people like you, Mary, and I don't think there are too many people like you, because you are such a unique, you have a unique experience there. And a lot of people, when they're told by the doctors that there's no hope and you might as well expect, you know, your bones to crumble and blah, 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 blah. And for you to have that wonderful inner sense that of your own individuality, and that you will do what you need to do for yourself, and then have the belief that you can do that, and that's belief in a positive way. Because I think there are positive ways to measure a belief, and that might be one of them, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just perfect. That is just perfect, and we can learn so much from you.
Thank you. And there is, I don't know, have any of you heard about Evie McDonald?
Yeah,
no.
I heard about her years ago when she had amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or was it multiple sclerosis? Or
No, you're right. It was ALS. It was Lou Gehrig's
ALS.
Disease.
Yeah, and I heard her speak years ago, actually. What do you know about her now?
Actually, now she's a minister. Kate and Joan and all of the listeners, Evie is mentioned in several of Dr. Bernie Siegel's books, and that's how I learned
mm-hmm.
about her. And she actually, her story inspired me to start loving myself and loving my body, which was just the crucial component of healing my life. And Evie was in a wheelchair. Her body was like jello, and she was dying from Lou Gehrig's disease, from ALS. And she decided that she wasn't going to die hating her body, and so she started loving her body, and she sat in the wheelchair looking in the mirror and started finding things to love about her body. And she reversed the entire disease process, and today she's a minister at a church in upstate New York.
Wow,
that's a beautiful story. That's a hard, that's a disease that people don't usually beat.
That's
no.
right. That's what the medical profession generally states, you know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, and they're not always right. My, it's just synchronistically, my brother D.D. Delaney is playing Maury. You know, Tuesdays with Maury, and.
Yeah.
He's playing Maury, and then it's just two people in the play, you know, the gentleman who takes care of him and Maury, and Schwartz, Maury Schwartz, and he says that he's learning a lot about doing that role. So it's getting a lot of great publicity. So yeah, that Tuesdays with Maury, even though Maury didn't per se beat the disease like Evie did, but he taught such a valuable lesson to the world,
mm-hmm.
which is the whole idea of love and no separation and being that one with spirit and so forth, all of that great stuff.
Is that in Lancaster? Is that where he is, Kate?
He's in Norfolk, Virginia.
Oh, okay.
But well, can't you imagine how inspiring it would be to play that role?
Oh, my gosh. He's really on cloud nine, I think.
I'm sure he is.
He'll have to tell us about it when he comes on the show at the end of June.
Yes, that would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would like
to be into that character, you know, and just to immerse himself in that role, and then to feel the energy from the audience. There's nothing like live theater in that kind of a situation, you know.
Yes, people weeping and crying because of the experience that they are having.
Wow.
What were you going to say, Len?
By the way, I would like to hear from Mary how she used self-love to, you know, to overcome the post-polio syndrome. Do you feel sharing?
The way that it got expressed was through writing the poetry. That, it goes back to my physical therapist when I had paralytic polio when I was 5. And she was such a source of love and light for me. And she read Dr. Seuss to me before every therapy session to relax me. And then during the physical therapy session, she would have me recite back to her, you know, The Cat in the Hat, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and that rhythm and that cadence settled into my soul. And shortly after being diagnosed with post-polio, it was a very, very cold, dark winter's day, and my first poem is Running the Race, and it talked all about celebrating my body, and it was the first time that I started connecting with my body, because as a polio survivor and a survivor of many horrific traumatic experiences, I disconnected. I learned how to dissociate. I learned how to ignore my body and tell my body that, excuse me, I'm here, present, you need to do something. And so it was through the poetry that I started loving myself, and also through the healing angels that I met in rehab. They were just amazing. And they, in their eyes, I just saw such love and compassion that I began to internalize that. And so it was a combination of being still and writing the poetry and feeling God's love for me, and then feeling the love that was being expressed through my rehab, through the hands-on rehab, as well as just, you know, the emotional love and compassion and support that I was receiving.
That's beautiful. Oh. That's beautiful. See, because love, in a sense, is a reminder of unity. It's the reminder of oneness. And what you were experiencing was dissociation from parts of your body, from parts of your past, from who you were,
mm-hmm.
in essence. And through this love, you remembered, brought back the members, you reconnected with your essential nature, and it became a portal to oneness in essence. And then that divine energy could flow directly through you rather than through all those beliefs and filters that we normally have as part of the human condition. And then that energy just flowed through you.
I have never heard it expressed so eloquently and so beautifully. That encapsulates it. That is beautiful, yes. That's the experience. And I, as you were saying that, I could just feel that energy through, there was no distance between us. It just,
mm-hmm.
you know, just flowed. Thank you. That's such a wonderful gift. Thank you.
Yeah. You could say, another way of saying it is that love links form with essence, you see. So it was the communicator to your form.
Ah.
You see, it communicated directly to your form. Your form, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It linked your physical body with your inner energy body, and your inner energy body with your spiritual nature, with your essence. And then it just flowed. And you know what's interesting about this is if we had hooked you up to an electrocardiogram, an electroencephalogram, an electromyogram, when you were going through these loving feelings and thoughts, and beyond that, beyond belief. This is really beyond belief. It's not a new belief. It's beyond belief. There's
mm-hmm.
a direct experience, a direct knowing, a direct calling, an opening, a vulnerability, a non-resistance, an acceptance, and we would be able to measure a shift in your entire energy field. It becomes what we call coherent. all the frequencies of your body start to come into phase with one another and group into frequency. And it's, we can easily document the shift. And this is what we'll be focusing on during the 3-day seminar, teaching people how to simply shift very simply through a coherent heart focus into these states, and then in these states simply ask for, visualize, focus on what it is that is wanted. And I don't say focus on what you want, but I said what is wanted, because sometimes you don't necessarily know what you want or what's really best for you, because that wanting is part of our conditioning. You know, we're conditioned by our desires and our fears. And the desires and the fears are conditioned by the early senses of separation. So sometimes, you know, we need to release our desires and, of course, our fears, and simply allow what comes through to come through from our, we could say, from our soul and from source. You know, not my will, but thy will be done. So initially, yes, it's fine to have, you know, your will, but when your will is aligned with source, that's when things happen. That's when things really happen. That's when things happen in such a way that they endure. I mean, we can change with our will, but it doesn't necessarily endure, you know.
Oh, that's right.
And
go ahead.
Go ahead. One of the things that was so crucial was that I had to love myself exactly as I was, that I couldn't set out to cure myself of post polio. I mean, that was not my goal. My goal was to really remember to remember, as you said, remember, and to remember who I am as a child of God. And so I did not set out to cure myself. I didn't even set out to heal my life. I just set out to do something, and I didn't even know what it was. But getting still and going within, and I have known Bernie since 1980s, and I often joke and say, "Boy, you know, I'm I'm a very difficult student, because it took me many illnesses to, you know, finally be able to heal my life." But I, as I said, you know, it wasn't about curing the post polio. And I deal with it every day. And I thought I had cured it by running the marathon, and realized shortly after that, no, this is something we just coexist with, but it doesn't define me or my life. And I'm still able to do amazing things despite what the doctors predicted. But it truly, truly is all about opening up and detaching and just connecting, and then seeing what happens, seeing, you know, where the river flows.
Yeah, and so that self-acceptance is another way of talking about love. If it's unconditioned, self-acceptance is another way of talking about love. Because if you are totally accepted exactly as you are, without any qualifications, conditions, reservations, what you would feel is love. You know, if you can imagine being totally, completely accepted exactly as you are, the feeling that you would have is love. And that's what I discovered when I was doing research at a number of university laboratories on the impact of love on the growth of cancer cells and bacteria and DNA. And that's when I discovered that in order to connect with them, in order to relate to them, I had to totally accept them exactly as they were, including the cancer cells, including the pathogenic bacteria, so-called pathogenic bacteria. I had to totally accept them exactly as they were, without any resistance to them, without any filters. And when I did that, they were very responsive to any intention that was introduced. But the intention was then not to destroy them, because I totally accepted them exactly as they are, but simply to change the direction of their growth. And when you can do that, either stimulate or decrease their growth rate, which we were able to do, if that happens in the body, then the body's own T cells, the killer cells, and immune system can then take over and do the job that it's designed to do. So that's, you know, these are just different ways of looking at the same thing. You demonstrated it, Mary, in your life, and we demonstrated it in the laboratory. It's just the same thing. Same thing, that unconditioned acceptance of the truth of what is in the moment, you know. Yeah, so it's very beautiful. Yeah, I really appreciate your sharing.
Thank you.
It's really, so when we're talking about the workshop that we're going to have here, to think that we will be learning how to, as you say, Len, document the shift so that we can live in a state of love and, as you say, unconditioned self-acceptance at all times.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, and this, just a word about this. This seminar is really primarily experiential. We're not in the seminar here to explore knowing about who you are. We're here to be who we are, and we're not exploring about love. We're here to directly experience love and be loving. So, and we're here not just to learn about who we are, really, but to truly be who we are. So this is the direct experience of your true nature. And what's the meaning of this? What's the value of this? Well, as long as we're identified with our forms, as we were mentioning, you know, things happen. Spiritual teachers and gurus, doesn't matter. The body undergoes change. It's a form, and all forms undergo change. And yet there's a part of who we are which was never born into form and never dies. And that part is what we're focusing on discovering in the opening to oneness through love. That's our immortal nature, the truth of who we really are. And so that's the focus of this. And that's why I call, healing into wholeness through love the ultimate medicine, because this form will die. It will change. It will undergo various illnesses. It's just a natural process. And yet, part of our purpose here is to, if not our central purpose, it is our central purpose, actually, is to discover who we are beyond our physicality, beyond our form, and yet at the same time embrace that we're operating through this form, but that's not who we really are. And so honoring the form and the formlessness and recognizing that we're beyond both the form and the formlessness, but not just to hear it intellectually, but to have the direct knowing of it, the direct knowing of it. And that's the purpose of this seminar. That's the intent of the seminar, to have a living, loving awareness of our own true nature.
I spent a day in the silence one time as a spiritual exercise with a small group. And as you talk, I get that same feeling. It's almost, yes, I recognize that. Because in the silence, we do create that space.
Oh, absolutely. The silence is you could say the silence is it. You know, that stillness, that silence, that space. We have different words for it. Presence. You know, but when we start to use words, the words start to confine it.
Right.
You can't contain something that's beyond concept with concepts and words.
Right.
And that's why we have to have the direct experience of, and we may not even be able to describe it, which would be good, because as soon as we try to describe it, we circumscribe it. We contain it.
Mm-hmm.
And we reduce it to a container, and then the mind puts it someplace and says, yeah, I know this, I got it, when in fact it's much larger than the capacity of the mind to contain.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll be, during this seminar, spending 3 days looking more deeply into ourselves than perhaps any other time in our lives, and then discover who it is that's looking. Who it is that's looking. And that's the key right there.
Well, then what happens when...
We're not coming for information. This is not for information. This is just the direct experience.
Now, what would you suggest then for those of us who have to go back out into the world where people are kind of shut down and pissed off and I don't know. It seems to me that you can go into a 3-day workshop like this and have the experience, and then somehow or even being at the another great example is being at the deathbed of somebody. And say I was at the deathbed of my aunt one time. It was a total experience of love for 3 days. And then I got the sense that when she died, that, oh, my God, we have to go back into the world where you can't even discuss death. You know, you can't discuss the fact that death is the most wonderful, this dying, death, rebirthing sort of experience was or just the most exciting thing that ever happened. You can't go into the world and say that because it's taboo. And it's almost... So I would like to know, how then do you go out into the world knowing what we know or not knowing, knowing, not knowing, just being? How do we deal with the world after an experience like that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because the short answer is once you become aware of the aware witness within you, if you develop the facility to drop into the aware witness as you're in the world, you're in it, but you're not of it, is one of the ways of explaining that situation, where you're able to have an awareness that allows you to disidentify with the content of awareness. So everything is happening, you see it happening, and you're aware of the seer itself, which is the aware witness. And when you have that aware witness within, you're not completely involved in what it is that's taking place. And that allows you, that gives you the portal, that's not the final stage, but that gives you the portal into that unified oneness. That's the portal home. That's all you have to do is turn from the aware witness, from focusing outside to inside, and you come into that stillness that we were referring to before, that space. But until then, you can reside as the aware witness with all that arises, all that movement, all that content, all that contrast comes up, and you watch it, You know, you can participate in it, but at the same time, you're not it itself. So we're not our stories. We're not our pain. We're not our illness. We're not our joy. We're not our pleasure. And there's all of this. And then there's the witness of it all. And so that's how we can start to integrate that into our worldly life as we come out of a seminar like this. Now, sometimes it happens that somebody makes the shift all the way into, beyond the witness, into that unitive consciousness where there's just one, there is no separation. Everything that happens, you know, is happening without a sense of an I, me that it's happening to. And that's a
very strong
shift.
Mm-hmm. That happened to Eckhart Tolle.
Yeah, and that happens, and that can happen with Tolle. It was interesting because it happened and it endured. And for other people,
yeah,
it can happen as an experience that arises, and it's sort of like one glimpse is a blessing, as it said. And it happens, and then you know that that's your true nature, and then you sort of drop back again into the witness or totally into the content, and then you come back again. And so for most people, it's back and forth, taking two steps deeper into your true nature and one step back until, you know, it happens more gradually. With Eckhart Tolle, it happened boom, you know, when he felt like life was so terrible he couldn't live another day or another night, and then
mm-hmm.
it just happened for him. But
that's
very uncommon. It's more common for it to be more gradual. But this is a very good point, and, you know, maybe we can share toward the end of the seminar how to integrate, you know, into our daily lives what we've experienced, and more importantly, who the experiencer is. You see, because experiences are just memories, essentially, and they're part of the story. But who we are is the awareness in which all of this arises, you see. So this whole seminar is designed for us to see what the awareness is in which all of this content arises. And that part is our immortality. That's
mm-hmm.
our true nature, and yet it's not even a personal thing at all at this point. You know, it's the ego can have a hard time dealing with this, and it creates a lot of resistance. And we'll be able to explore that as well. You know,
mm-hmm.
because it wants to persist as an artifact. And it doesn't consider itself an artifact, but it is. It's, you know, it's a mind-made creation, and it wants to persist. And so we can.
It is a very strong part of ourselves. It can be this ego that you're talking about.
Yeah, well, it is the source of what we're calling ourselves. And when we recognize that what we're in the pursuit of the self. It's so interesting because we're aware that there's difference, there's uniqueness, there's individuation, and then beyond that individuation and uniqueness, there's only oneness. And you know, physicists are beginning to get a sense of that when they look at, well, what is it that constitutes our material world? And then they say, well, it's made up of molecules, and then these molecules are made up of atoms, and then these atoms are made up of subatomic particles, and then it turns out that all these subatomic particles, whether they're part of steel or wood or glass, are all the same. And you know, they're not different, these subatomic particles that constitute these. It doesn't matter whether they're involved in a steel structure or wood or glass, they're similar. So when you get down and then say, well, what are the subatomic particles made of? Mm-hmm. And as you go further and further down, ultimately what you get to is they're made of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Consciousness that takes form. And, you know, before you, and then consciousness expresses as light. And then, so all of these subatomic particles are various forms of light. Light that's stabilized or frozen, or light that's moving. And so then we start to, and so part of the purpose of the seminar is to delve into the very source of form and see that ultimately it's the formless that gives rise to the form. And when we identify with the form, we enter into essentially the suffering, because the form is always changing. It's at the quantum level, that's what happens. It's always releasing and absorbing energy in the form of photons and electrons, and so it's always changing. And if we're identified with the form, saying, well, who are we? Wait a minute, we're always changing. I've got to create something that's stable. And so mm-hmm. what we do as humans is we create this thing called an ego. With memories and stories, and okay, well, that's stable. There we go. We have a story. We have to give ourselves a name and put a label on it. And I know who I am. I'm Leonard. You know. I mean, what does that really mean? You know. And
yeah.
This is how we create this. And so to be able to go back to consciousness itself. Which is very scary to the mind and its projection, the ego of who we are. Scary thing. If I give up that, then what will happen? How can I function? But there's no, you know, and so on. And the amazing thing, and that's the message that you get from, you know, the great spiritual teachers who have gone through this process, to realize that it all happens. We think with the mind that we have to do all this. We don't realize it just happens, you know. When you look at a cat, it's just the most amazing animal, and it doesn't have to think about what it does. In the same way that a child that learns how to walk, it doesn't think itself into walking. It just, when the time comes, it just happens, you know. It's built in. And the same thing is true for our entire form-based life structure. It's built in. It just happens. But we're in such a conundrum because we think that we're in control. So these are all issues that I think we'll be exploring deeply in the seminar.
Yeah, oh my gosh. When I think about how exciting this is, I can hardly stand it. But
it's all going to be
a
function of the people who come, you know? It's
yeah.
It's not that there's something that's set, because it's a function of the people that come and what source wants for those who are present. That's the way it really unfolds.
Absolutely. I mean, we show up and allow it to take off. It's taking a leap of faith, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very exciting. Very exciting. Yeah.
Well, we really appreciate the fact that you will be coming to our home to open up our spiritual retreat center, and the nature of the event is going to be something we don't know until it happens what it will be like you say. But, and like you say, we can't define anything. It's not what we're here for. We're allowing definitions to hopefully go out the window. So.
Yeah. And this
and Mary's got a great way to bless
yeah.
Blue Heron, and she's so right. What a wonderful
way. Yeah, what
way.
A way. We're blessing Blue Heron, the Blue Heron Farm Retreat Center.
Right.
With your presence.
You might say when it is again for people who want to come and give them some information or how they acquire information.
Yes. Yeah, it is the it's going to be the 13th, 14th, and 15th of August. What I need to do is just put a – well, Mary knows about it, and there's one guest, so I will put the link for the brochure that you have created. Let me do that. And
Kate, you might
I'm
also
excited.
Want to start – Kate?
Yes.
You might want to do
yes.
events on Facebook.
Ah.
To let people know about it.
Some sort of page?
Yeah,
you can actually create an event page for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Well, can
You're
you
welcome.
Help me do that?
Oh, absolutely.
That's a great idea.
Yes, Facebook is a real happening place. There's no doubt about that. And but I want to say that for people who are interested, they will be contacting your office, Leonard, and
yes.
we'll be contacting Anita, and that's how we're doing this. In the future, people, of course, will be contacting us for other events, but in this case, we're going to have them contact your office.
Sure, and
so,
they can go to my website if they want, which is lasko.net, www.lasko.net, or
mm-hmm.
they can call me at 541,
541, I have that.
Yeah, you
go
have
ahead.
That. Yeah, I forget what the office number is because I don't use
it. It's the one with the 99.
Yeah, that's right. 535-0099. 541-535-0099. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, let me just put that up. And I'm going to put the link up for the brochure. Okay, cool. Mary, I don't know if you ever saw that brochure, but there it is.
I did.
I thought so.
Yeah.
So there we have it. And I will be, an events page up at Facebook and keep Twittering and keep blogging and all this wonderful stuff. And also, this radio, what I'll do, Len, is send you the archive link for this program, so I think that will help. You can actually put that wherever you want to put it.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
Okay, everybody. Thank you so much, Len and Mary and Joan. Thank you so much. We love you. And I will be playing the music for Mother and Child by C.D. Jensen. And, Len, I'll be talking to you soon and everybody else, too, as a matter of fact. Okay, here we go.
Thank you.
Love you all.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.